You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Hello and welcome along to the William Hill Boxing Podcast with Steve Bunce. Buncey's on the line joining me, Mark Walton, right now. And how are you, Buncey? You well?
I've never been better. What a time it is to be a boxing fan in Britain. In fact, only in Britain, to be honest. If you're around the world, it's doing okay. But in Britain, we are flourishing.
Yes, British boxing is absolutely booming at the moment. Part of that down to Anthony Joshua, of course, who knocked out Vladimir Klitschko at Wembley in front of 90,000 people. All the hype and all the talk about who Joshua may face next.
Who's talking about it? Stop talking rubbish. No one cares about it. What a... I tell you, I've never known a fight galvanize so many people. I mean, maybe Eubank and Ben, and maybe one or two of Nassim Hamid's fights. Maybe. We're talking about, during a 30-year period, this is right up there for people just non-stop talking about it.
Yeah, he's arguably the most famous boxer in the world at the moment. And a lot of talk of who he will face next. There's been talk of Tyson Fury coming out of retirement. There's been talk of a rematch with Klitschko. I've been reading that he might end up facing Dillian White again because he wants a grudge match with them both having a win each, if you like, with Joshua winning the professional fight and Dillian White obviously winning in the amateurs. A whole host of names been put forward. Deontay Wilder in the mix and everything else as well.
All four of those are potentials. All four of those make sense. Why not fight Dillian White at Vicarage Road in Watford in October in front of 35,000 people? That makes sense. Why not have a rematch with Vladimir Klitschko, either back at Wembley or somewhere in Germany? Klitschko's got the right to force it or push it because it's part of his contract, a rematch. Why not wait for Tyson Fury to lose his 7th, which he's very serious about, and fight him next year? And why not have some kind of partial unification with Deontay Wilder? But it also, in a couple of weeks' time, this is kind of bizarre, you probably think I'm joking, but Joshua, in a couple of weeks' time, will probably be ordered to fight the winner of a fight between Shannon Briggs and Frezza Kendo, who are 45 and 43 years of age, respectively, because they are fighting for the WBA regular title, and Big Josh is the WBA super champion, and so he may have to agree to fight one of those two, and it'll be a lot of fun whilst it lasts, or end up losing one of the belts that was up for grabs when he fought Klitschko. So just when you thought it was sensible and people could understand it, along comes this lunacy. Hey ho, as they say. I know one thing, the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 fights with Joshua will all be entertaining. Maybe not as entertaining as the Klitschko fight, but there'll be something for everybody in the fights.
Yeah, I mean, that's just boxing politics there, what you mentioned. There's been talk of him dropping his IBF title so he doesn't have to face Pulev because you get more money out of Klitschko rematch or whatever else. So, it's a bit disappointing when the politics get in the way, isn't it?
Well, the politics have been getting in the way, really. I mean, people, maybe don't understand, but back in the mid-60s when Muhammad Ali was so clearly and obviously the best heavyweight on the planet, there was another world champion at the time, and there were lots of people in America especially that considered the other champions to be the real champion. So when Muhammad Ali was stripped of his titles, there were two championships, the WBA and the WBC. They've been around since 63 and 64 respectively. So it's nothing new, this kind of lunacy and stupidity. But there's just such goodwill with Joshua. You just imagine the men that run the WBA down in Panama would just see sense and think, you know what, we won't give them Shannon the Cannon Briggs, who was knocked out 19 years ago by Lennox Lewis. We'll let Joshua build the sport, build the image, because that will be, in the short and long term, good for everybody. But they won't think that. They'll strip him, and we'll see some kind of lunacy, mayhem and chaos. People outside the sport think we're crazy. In the middle of the sport, we know we're odd.
In an ideal world, this is never going to happen, but I'd like to see Wilder face Parker for the two other belts, and then a unification fight between Joshua and the winner of that to see somebody have all the belts, basically. But we're unlikely to see that, aren't we?
Yeah, you are. You probably need to see someone about the dreams you're having at night. They'll give you some medication, you sort yourself out. Hey, listen, who knows? It could happen. There is a groundswell of sensible people involved. That's just that. You know, I always... maybe the cynic in me, but I always assume that we're going to see something odd. What I don't want to see is Joshua fight someone who isn't from the names we've mentioned. Suddenly someone else comes into the mix, and that wouldn't really work. You know, Joshua's got three or four natural foes and opponents, and that's really his next three, four, five, six fights, as far as I'm concerned, allowing for a couple of rematches.
If you could cherry-pick yourself, who would you pick for him?
Who would I pick for him? I'd go home crowd, Watford against Dillian White. Dillian White's got some sort of eliminator against the towering Polish geezer called Marius Vak in a couple of weeks' time. If White beats Vak, and he will, then in my opinion, why not have a third fight between these two in Watford at the football stadium in September, 40,000 outside, the hottest ticket in town. That's what I'd have.
Yeah, certainly would be entertaining, if nothing else, if you judge by previous fights.
And then next April and May, you have Klitschko rematch or Tyson Fury if he's back and on track.
Yeah. Yeah, you need...
Bingo.
You need Fury. He'd need that much time to probably get back in shape, won't he?
He told me the other day, Fury, that he needs... And he said some kind of wild things, but he said one or two sensible things. And the most sensible thing he said made a lot of sense. He said it would take me 8 to 10 months to lose the 8 stone. Now, that was sensible.
Yeah. Yeah, good. We'll leave that there anyway, because we've got fights to talk about this week. We're going to look at some of the action at the Barclaycard Arena, which was the NIA in Birmingham, and the First Direct Arena in Leeds as well, where Josh Warrington is back in action. We'll start with the action in Birmingham, and we'll fly through some of these early fights quickly, because they're very lopsided in the betting. Sean Davis against Gamal Yafai. 12-0 record for Davis. Yafai got an 11-0 record. Somebody's always got to go, as they say, and 1-6 for Yafai. The draw 25-1, and Sean Davis 7-2. Very lopsided betting. Do you see it being that way?
Yeah, I mean, they're both. The one thing about this fight which could unnerve either one of them is that it's a local derby. They're both from Birmingham, fights in Birmingham, so that creates strange kind of things that at ringside. Neither of them have been in a fight where there's pressure in the past. You know, where something's really on the line. They've won various titles and they've been in decent fights, but you know, for fighters with that level of experience, but neither of them have been somewhere where there's a little bit of edge, and you just fancy Gamal all of those years working with the British amateur team and traveling around the world. I just fancy him to have a little bit too much. You look at Davis; he's had a couple of tens in his last couple of fights. So he's no problem going a distance. And if Gamal can't get to him, I think Gamal wins on points. I've just got a feeling Gamal might get to him, certainly by about 6 or 7.
Right. Okay, 1-6 for Gamal to win that. We'll move on to the next fight that we're going to look at. Seferino Rodriguez against Sam Eggington. 9-2 for Rodriguez. The draw 25-1. Eggington 1-8 in the market. The career records on the line here, 24-1. For Rodriguez, 20 wins and 3 defeats for Eggington. The EBU European welterweight title on the line, betting very lopsided here as well. Rodriguez 9-2, Eggington 1-8 in the market there. He's got an exciting style, hasn't he, Eggington? Wins over Frankie Gavin and Paulie Malignaggi look really good, and he's saying that he's going to come out and do it again.
He's entitled to do it again against Rodriguez, whose record's perfectly respectable. He's been in with some, you know, the right kind of guys. But Eggington's on a bit of a run. I think he's on 3 stoppage wins since he was outboxed last March to lose his British title. A guy called Bradley Skeet gave him a bit of a boxing lesson, really, poor Sam, that night. He's kind of, you know, he kept going one way, going another way, and Bradley just stuck to a plan. Anyway, Sam's effective. He can get you if he can rough you up and get on top of you a little bit. And that's exactly what he did against Paulie. He shocked Paulie by just how aggressive he was, and also how sort of strong he was. So I fancy he'll get to this guy. I think it'll be his 4th straight stoppage since losing to Bradley Skeet, and that'll be a fight that hopefully he'll move closer towards getting. So I fancy Eggington, and I fancy Eggington probably down the straight a little bit, maybe 7 or 8 rounds.
Yeah, you fancy him to win by a stoppage again, yeah?
Yeah, 7 or 8. I mean, listen, he's a perfectly good opponent, Seferino Rodriguez, but Sam Eggington's a good fighter, and that's why, you know, that's why the odds are what they are. It's a really strange thing, because when you're working on a podcast for a gambling company, you can't come on and say it's a 50-50 fight when the odds tell you it's 1-6 and 7-2. You know, and that's the beauty, because there needs to be a degree of honesty. And the bottom line is, it's a perfectly respectable opponent, but I think Sam might even, I've gone 7-8, it might even be early, but I'm going to stick with 7-8.
All right, moving on to the big bout in Birmingham, Cal Yafai against Suguru Muranaka. Cal is 1-20, the draw 33-1, and Muranaka is 8-1. Cal Yafai angling for a divisional, is aiming for divisional greats. Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez on the back of this, yeah, in a title fight. He's going to have to win this, well, you say relatively impressively, to try and tempt him over to UK shores, would you say?
Yeah, 1-20 tells you that he's meant to win it, and he will win it. The Japanese guy, I'm not sure if he's even ever left Japan, but nothing wrong with that, by the way, because it's a lovely country. And if you've got back in, why leave? Why travel? Because people overplay that travelling. I think Khalid's a fight away, and this is the fight away from moving into some very, very deep water with some really good fighters. There aren't any easy fights. There's five or six fighters. There's a Thai guy called Wangek who beat Gonzalez earlier this year. It was a bit of a shock, but I thought he deserved it. There's a brilliant Japanese guy called Inui who might just be the second or third best fighter in the world right now. Then there's a guy called Quadras who Gonzalez beat last year. These four or five guys, they operate on a very rare level. Well, Khalid's there. Cal's there. He's just below that left level. And to show that, he needs to make guys like Muranaka. He needs to beat them clearly, very clearly. My gut feeling is it's 12 rounds. My gut feeling is it's quite wide for Cal. Anything better than a 12-round points win would be a very good win. He's there to win. The odds tell you he's there to win, and he will win. So I'm going Cal, and I'm going points.
Cal on points then, to extend his record to 22-0 in that WBA World Super Flyweight title fight. Let's have a look at the action in the Leeds Arena as well. Big night for Leeds boxers with Josh Warrington in action. Nicola Adams also on the card as well. We know what it's going to be like there. We're going to be Leeds atmosphere, Leeds fans singing and so on, yeah, and so forth. We'll start with a fight before Josh Warrington. Josh Leather against Philip Sutcliffe Jr. for the vacant IBF British Super Bantamweight title. Quite tight in the betting as well here. 10-11.
So it should be. It's the best fight of the weekend.
Yeah, 10-11.
It might be the best fight of the weekend anywhere in the world.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, because if you look at the fights that are around, you know, in the dozen or so countries that have got three or four shows or five shows this weekend, I'm telling you, this might just be the best fight in the world this weekend. Beautiful.
Got that to look forward to. Josh Leather at 10-11 in the market, 20-1 for the draw, and 4-5 for Philip Sutcliffe Jr. So it's almost a pick-em in the market. You say it's going to be one of the biggest fights, if not the biggest fight of the weekend, or best fight of the weekend. Who wins it? It's going to be very tight.
Well, you have to fancy Sutcliffe because he's been longer rounds and he's had harder fights, even though he's only had a couple of more fights than Josh in 14 to Josh's 11. So you've got to fancy Sutcliffe a little bit in the sense that his one loss was disputed and it was overseas in Germany against a Frenchman called Yigit. And that guy then travelled to this country and beat a guy called Lenny Dawes for the genuine European title earlier this year. So there's good form. So in the man that narrowly beat him or controversially beat Sutcliffe, it was a really good fighter. Now, Yigit would be seen as really a much higher level than both of these two. In theory, he's the European champion. Josh still relatively inexperienced at 11. Forget the ball, the belt that's online. I mean, it's 12 rounds, which is quite interesting because Sutcliffe's been there or close to there. Whereas Lever hasn't really, in the sense that he's not got a whole history of 10 and 12 rounds. However, saying that, I just fancy that with Josh Lever, this is a kid that I thought might have broken through last year. He didn't. I think this is going to be his breakthrough year. I think this is a really hard fight. I think this is a terrific fight. And I just fancy Josh Lever over the course. And it's a real hard fight. There's one thing that's not going to happen in this fight. It's not going to be easy for either of them. Whoever wins is going to have to really win. Even if he wins in the second round, it's going to be a really hard first and second round. So I'm going Josh Lever, and I'm going Josh Lever on points. And it's one of the toughest I've had to pull in a long time.
Okay, so you're expecting a bit of a war then, you reckon?
Oh, yeah. Listen, it'll be a boxing match, but at some point they're going to have to go for it. And it's a tough old fight, a really tough fight.
Let's move on to the top of the bill at the Leeds Arena then. Josh Warrington against Kiko Martinez. Warrington 1-12 in the betting. The draw is 33-1. Kiko Martinez 6-1. Joshua 24-0. Kiko Martinez 36 wins, 7 defeats, and one draw. And of course, a former super bantamweight world champion. It's is it going to be a tougher test for Josh Warrington this time around?
It's not going to be the fight, the easy fight that some people keep trying to tell me, because only a year ago Kiko went out and fought Leo Santa Cruz, a really good fighter who just this year beat Carl Frampton, and he fought him. He got stopped, but he was in the fight. He was there. And you know, a few months before that, he had a real bang up with a guy called Scott Quigg, which was really, you know, it was tight. They just smashed each other to bits. It ended in the second round. And I don't think Kiko is the spent force that people keep trying to tell me. The last thing a fighter loses is his punch. And he can bang. I mean, he can really, he's one of the most serious super bantamweight punches I've seen in the flesh. And I'm talking about going back 10 years to when he went to Dublin and knocked out a guy called Bernard Dunn, I think in the first round, to win the European title, European super bantamweight title. I was working for Irish Radio on the night, and it was stunning. And with bangers, you can feel their punches at ringside, and you know they really hurt the opponents, because the opponents, their face changes. Not that they say anything, but you can just tell from their face that they are like, oh my golly gosh, that hurt like I haven't been hurt since X or Y. So he can bang like hell, and he may be a little bit slow now, and he may be a bit vulnerable now, and he's certainly been beaten enough times, 7 times in total, to mean he's not invincible. But I am telling you, if he catches an overconfident Josh Warrington anywhere above the navel, it will hurt Josh. Saying that, Josh is just on a bit of a roll at the moment. Plus, he feels he's got something to prove. So I actually think Josh might go for a stoppage, might try and stop him late in the fight. And Josh is not, you know, not a big banger. That's one of the criticisms of him, if there is one. The man sells out a massive arena. He's unbeaten. He's ranked in all the world governing bodies. People still look for something to criticise. That's how we are. It's bizarre. No, I fancy Josh to stop Kiko, to stop him somewhere after about round 7 or 8. I think he's going to get to him. And I'm just fancying Josh around the, I don't know, 8 or 9 or 10 mark. So that last quarter stoppage.
Interesting. 8, 9 and 10 are all 12-1 in the markets in favour of Josh Warrington. Josh Warrington just to win by knockout, TKO or disqualification is 6-5 in the betting. You get a bit of juice out of that, don't you, as well with Josh Warrington? Because as you rightly say, nobody expects him to knock anybody out.
Absolutely. Well, he's not going to have to move that much once he starts to get to this. Once he breaks down Martinez, once he starts to land and he starts to think, then I think he'll go to work. And listen, let me tell you something. There's no such thing as a non-puncher. There's just guys that punch harder than other guys. Calling people a non-puncher is something that lots of people tend to do from the safe side of the ropes. If you're 8'10" and someone's hitting you who weighs 8'10", trust me, it hurts. All that happens is that with punchers, it hurts more. So I assure you, Josh Warrington can hurt people. Josh Warrington can catch people. And what's more, Josh has got good eye, good accuracy. I think Josh is going to get to him. And it's going to be a double, triple, quadruple lead celebration because the Lioness is back in town.
Yeah, do you think Nicola...
And life will stop as Nicola Adams wanders to the ring.
Just imagine if Josh Warrington does actually win by stoppage in front of that crowd at Leeds Arena, by the way. It's going to go absolutely berserk, isn't it?
Well, listen, imagine if he won by a stoppage in one round. They wouldn't know what to do. They're so used to 40 minutes or 50 minutes of singing, they'd be stuffed.
Yeah. We've only just got halfway through marching on together. Keep going.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, it's been superb. Yeah. It's been a pleasure, Bunty. Real pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure.
Good luck and enjoy it this weekend.
Tidlin, good luck. If you're having a bet, remember, gamble responsibly and don't back ridiculously. And if you lose, don't blame me. Speak to you later.
ACCA 5 is William Hill's new ACCA insurance. It means if you have a 5 selection accumulator and one lets you down, you'll get your money back as a free bet. And it's available across all sports. ACCA 5, exclusive to William Hill. T's and C's apply.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.